You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Jim Donovan, Jason Gibbs. Gibbs, have you ever been affected at your job due to someone snoring?
I have not.
Have you affected others?
No.
My wife would say yes right now. Yeah. Yeah. My wife definitely would say yes. Yeah.
It happens. It happens to the best of us.
It's amazing something like that, though, that can – that or Kyrie Irving and his bed bug incident 48 hours ago, which I had it freaked me out. I would not –
How does that happen?
Could we just go over the facts of the case on that? I mean, he had the bed bugs, right?
And the
hotel has admitted to that now. But on that broadcast on Sunday, they definitely did describe that as flu-like symptoms, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So how do they feel about that? I mean, someone didn't tell the truth.
Right.
And I think the five-star hotel probably the Cavs stayed at probably isn't very pleased to be hearing something about some kind of bed bug.
They've admitted that they did have a bed bug problem.
I'm going to take you, because I'm the oldest of the group here, I'll take you back to the game where, unfortunately, Beiner fumbled, okay?
Okay.
In the AFC Championship game, and we were out in Denver the night before that game, and the Bronco, I think it was the flagship station out there, I think it was KOA is the big station out there, KOA. And they had something, you know, all right, and they had Bronco fans. They gave the address of the hotel, and they had Bronco fans in shifts in a parade of cars go around the block and honk their horns all night long in Denver. So, that's the only other incident that I can remember that something like that happened. They honked the horns.
And that didn't get shut down?
No. No, it was all night long because we happened to be staying in the same hotel covering the team, and it was all night long. Now, I'm not saying that that's the reason the Browns got off to a horrible start the next afternoon and then rallied back, and then it fell apart at the end, but that happened, out in Denver.
That's really not a bad idea, though. It's a good home field advantage. I mean, I respect that.
By the way, the Steelers will be staying at...
Right? We might have to get that out there, Gibbs. That could be your job.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I like that challenge.
Yep. I'm sure.
As long as we're not on the receiving end of that challenge,
I know.
I'll be happy. Mm.
That's right. All right, let's get Mel Kiper's pre-combine conference call. It took place yesterday, and we've got some of the top cuts for you, certainly ones that are Browns-specific. We'll start off with, why do you have Wentz over Goff as the quarterback for the Browns?
I think Wentz bigger at 6'5 and a quarter, 233 than Goff, but Goff's going to get bigger and stronger once he's in the league. Goff's the better passer. Wentz has mobility, but Goff can move around in the pocket. That's a tough call. You know, Wentz played in the dome, but he did play in some cold temperatures here and there, nothing below 34 degrees. So, that will be, when you get into the teens and 20s, it will be a little bit of a shock, even though he's coming from North Dakota State. So I think it's a flip of the coin right now, Marlon, those two quarterbacks. Some like Goff, some like Wentz. I just went with the bigger quarterback in Wentz at number two.
The end of the argument for me, if there is an argument, but the end is Goff's a better passer, of story.
And he's better going through his reads.
And
he's
played the position longer, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great story. Okay, this kid could be a great player. I don't know if we can take any kind of flyer, though, here. You know, we drafted a 28-year-old guy out of Oklahoma State to be our quarterback who was best known for having a 95-mile-an-hour fastball as a pitcher, right? And that was a flyer, don't you think?
Yes, even at number 22. Yeah.
Oh, was that what he was at 22?
Yeah.
Okay, because
that's the pick.
That's
Quinn,
the pick.
Whedon, Johnny.
22's the pick, you're right.
At least this time it's just pick number two, so that is good.
Right, 28-year-old guy. Who we all conditioned ourselves because we want this to work so much. We all said, well, his maturity, will help him. We won't go through the goofy rookie stuff, and it just didn't play out that way.
Damn, did he look good in that preseason game against Detroit. You remember that?
Yeah, that was the first year when Norv was here and everybody was excited.
Yeah,
I remember watching him, though, in his bowl game against Andrew Luck in Stanford. Yeah,
uh-huh.
And he played well.
Yeah,
he
also had Justin Blackman
yeah, that's
who
right.
was pretty darn good, who's got issues of his own. All right, let's talk about Mel Kiper. What are the positives and the negatives on Wentz?
You know, great attitude, great approach, hard worker. Was down in the Mobile coming out of North Dakota State, I guess playing in a couple championship games. Nothing bothers the kid. Nothing rattles him. Now, you know, the whole weather thing, you know, he didn't play in any weather below with 34 degrees. So he played in some windy games. We got all the numbers on that, and we'll talk about that on draft day. But coming out of the dome, we'll see. Coldest game, 34 degrees. Now, if you go to Cleveland, you're going to be playing in Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Baltimore. So weather conditions will be unfavorable. With his size, good arm, not a great arm, he's going to be either, I think, the second pick.
It'll be, and I think these interviews with the two guys are going to go a long way, and I think getting to see them throw next to each other. But I think Carson Wentz may have more potential, but he is very much still a work in progress.
He's a project.
Yeah. And that's why some people think that San Diego might actually take him at three.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think that Dallas would be enamored with him. Because if you remember when they drafted Eli Manning, who was then traded for Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees was still on that team.
Absolutely.
So they're not afraid to succession plan. And by the way, having a good quarterback, as we've seen, fairly important in the NFL.
Didn't Brees play the next the one year, right?
And then he had the shoulder injury. And then he left via free agency and went to the Saints and started setting NFL records and won a Super Bowl with Sean Payton. Now, one guy who many people thought was a surefire first-round quarterback, probably headed into this season, was Connor Cook.
Yes.
And now you don't know where he's going to go, and Mel Kiper was asked why his stock has plummeted.
Well, I think in terms of when I go back and watch him, there's some passes that needed to be precise at times that weren't. I think in terms of that part of it, the great leadership qualities that you need to galvanize a team. The interviews for Connor Cook are going to be important because there's going to be questions about that. I have a second round grade on him. I know some are trying to push for the first, and then you talk to different a lot of people. I get calls often. Why isn't he a one? I think he's more of a two. And not being at the Senior Bowl, I know coming back from the injury, that was a decision.
That was a bad decision is what it was, because, you know, one of the reasons, too, that this Wentz hype is so big right now is he was the only guy that they've been able to get their hands on. You've been able to see Goff. You haven't seen Goff since then. He didn't go to the Senior Bowl. He's a junior. So I think that as this is the first opportunity to get those guys all on the same page.
You know, there were a couple of times when I watched Cook, both last year, this past season, and the year before that, when he really had he had a great year that year. And I thought he locked on a number of times to people, to his receivers.
If you watch Wentz,
yeah,
that's what he does. His first read, and he is locked on.
Yeah.
And when he goes to the next one, that's when it gets dicey.
Right, yeah.
And I work in the NFL.
And I really thought that got messy for Cook in the game that knocked them out this year, he threw some big-time picks, and they were really locked on to receivers. I mean, defense knew where he was going, got there before it, and stole it.
And that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, The non-captain thing bothers me, and I remember leading up to that Buckeyes game, there were all the reports from the people at the stadium when he was warming up saying that he was running around, he looked fine, he had noticeable zip on the ball,
right.
He seemed like he could play,
yeah,
and he didn't play.
Right. And, boy, how they played.
And then they won.
I mean, how they played without him.
They ruined the team that is going to have probably maybe more first-round picks than
absolutely
ever. So Mike Mayock is doing his press conference right now, and hopefully we'll get to talk with him at the combine. If not, we can play some of the stuff. Here is something that is a very interesting quote from Mike Mayock. He's talking about University of Georgia outside linebacker Leonard Floyd, and he says he's a polarizing prospect. And here's his analysis on the polarizing. Some people think he's a top 10 pick. Some people think he's Barkevious Mingo.
Wow. Really?
Ouch. That's what I read. I was like, shots fired.
Ouch,
my
wow.
goodness. And as we know, Barkevious Mingo was a top 10 pick. He was number 6 in that draft. But that's
– you know, I got to tell you, Nathan, I remember we did at Channel 3 after Mingo was drafted, we did a town hall where fans came in, and Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi and Jimmy Haslam and Rob Chudzinski and Alex Shiner, they were all there, okay? And I can remember Banner and Lombardi sitting up with me, and their segment was that Mingo was a can't-miss, you know, revolutionary kind of player, high-quality guy, high-character guy, and he is.
And he is.
But they were just so sure about that pick. Now, they didn't make a lot of picks, as you and I were talking about off off microphone that, you know, that was not a great draft, and they kind of set themselves up for the next draft. But they felt that Mingo was going to carry them through on that draft.
And you look back at it, was not a great draft up top. But Ziggy Ansah, who you talked about yesterday, who stock shot up at the combine, right, ended up being probably the best guy out of those top picks, and then Lane Johnson as well.
Right.
But you had Deion Jordan was in that draft. Mm-hmm. You had Fisher and Jokel. I mean, it wasn't a great top of that draft.
No.
I think Lane Johnson went 4, Ansah 5, and then the Browns with Mingo. And even the guys behind them didn't amount to much until you got into the teens. I believe it was Aaron Donald was ended up being the best guy in that one. But you look at that, and you see what they're talking about with Mingo, and that's what reminds you. Why have the Browns, that's supposed to be number 6 overall, that's supposed to be a foundation piece. Number 8 overall, Justin Gilbert, foundation piece. You got your quarterback, Johnny Manziel, supposed to be a foundation piece. Cam Irving, Shelton, top 19
12 and
picks.
19. Yeah. 12 and
foundation
19, yeah.
pieces. And you're just not – yeah, Trent Richardson, Whedon. I mean, you keep going, and you realize it's hard to be that bad in the first round. The law of averages dictate that it should – get better.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you are bad in the first round like that, look at what it does. It's like a prison sentence. It's such, how many years are you going to serve to get out of that?
Right.
Yeah, really. I mean, you got to do a lot of things to get out of it. You know, Butch Davis had problems. You know what Butch Davis used to do when he came here? He would draft and then the next year draft to rectify the mistake he made from the year before.
Yeah. And that's tough.
Draft to make to change that, what the mistake was the year before. If he drafted a center one year and it didn't work out, he drafted a center. You know, he drafted Melvin Fowler. Uh-huh. All right. It didn't work out. He drafted Jeff Fain. Okay. To the next year. He would always draft out of the mistake of what happened the year before.
Yeah.
You're working uphill all the time.
Yeah. You're just throwing more and more assets at the same thing. And I do think what's interesting as well is you look at, you know, this year's draft, the wide receiver draft, not as great.
Right.
The defensive line draft is maybe Mike Mayock saying maybe it's the best in 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did we do? We drafted 2 defensive linemen last year.
Right.
And
right.
we didn't draft a receiver. So,
right.
And some of it is understanding where the talent is in the draft and taking advantage of that. I still think when you go back and look at it, the way that the picks that were made, the individual selected in the first round of that draft with Gilbert and Manziel went a long way to sealing the deal. But I think it was the fact that you look at the guys that were even drafted in the second round at wide receiver in that draft, and that the Browns had a massive need and ignored it completely when Allen Robinson, who we know led the league in 14 touchdowns,
right.
Jordan Matthews, who had a very good year for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Right.
These guys were there in the mid-second to late-second in that
right.
draft, and the Browns wanted to trade up to get Terrence West, who's not even a Brown anymore.
I know. Unbelievable.
It is.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the number 2 pick. Mel Kiper, still from his conference call, he said if the Browns pass on a quarterback at number 2, which we all hope they don't, what do you see them doing?
Do they even pass on both of them and take, say, Jalen Ramsey to help that secondary and then look at a quarterback in the early second round? You know, it happened in Cincinnati with A.J. Green and then Andy Dalton. Happened in Oakland with Khalil Mack and then Derek Carr. Happened in San Diego with LaDainian Tomlinson and Drew Brees. So teams have worked that formula effectively on 3 different occasions. Okay, so maybe they could take another player like Ramsey and then get the quarterback early second, gamble that Lynch would be there. Maybe they like Connor Cook from Michigan State. Maybe they like Hackenberg. Maybe they like Prescott. Somebody else, a Hugh Jackson, feels, hey, I can get one of those 3 guys in the second round. I don't need to take a quarterback at 2.
Yeah, I just don't think you can play that game. I think you just have to go get him. You have to get him with the number 2 pick. You have to if you can make the 3-13 record pay off in any way, you rectify your biggest problem and the one that's been decades here, and that is you have to go get the quarterback. You got to go get him.
I just don't
see you can gamble that and go down there. You're still going to get a really good player at 32.
Yeah.
For your other many needs on the roster.
Yeah, and you talked earlier. To me, 32 is edge rusher, it's receiver.
Yeah.
Or it could be if one of the Mikes, a middle linebacker, slides down there,
right.
Get that guy that can be the anchor in the middle of your defense. Because
absolutely.
I don't know if Damsey's going to be here next year, and even if he is on the downside, certainly, or nearing the tail end of his career. Guy keeps himself in phenomenal shape, but when you're starting inside linebacker's going to be 34, it's time
right.
to make sure you have an inside linebacker to replace him going forward. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll do the 2015 Browns position review 6-pack on that defensive line. Plus, we'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850, Zagura and Donovan on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Let's bring in right now our producer, Jason Gibbs. By the way, Mike Mayock just said Carson Wentz has a ceiling similar to Andrew Luck. These guys say, I feel like they get on these conference calls and they are talking for so long that they say crazy things. I mean, everybody said that he was the greatest prospect since John Elway, Andrew Luck. And Mike Mayock just said, I see a ceiling for this kid similar to Andrew Luck. And if that were the case, he would be the number one quarterback on everybody's board and we wouldn't even be having discussions. Right. And
you know, the Andrew Luck has become kind of the model of everything. He's almost like a title card for the draft, because when you go into the draft, the first thing they'll say, well, if a team needs a quarterback, they'll say, well, there's no Andrew Luck in this draft.
Right.
You know, I mean, he's the comparison guy.
It's unbelievable. I mean,
isn't it unbelievably unfair when we look at the struggles we've had at the position and what Indianapolis had for so many years with Peyton Manning, and he has the neck problem for the 1 year. They suffer through 1 year of Manning not playing and having every Tom, Dick, and Harry play for them that year, but it got them Andrew Luck.
It's unbelievable.
It's 1 year. That's all they did was 1 year.
It is very, very lucky.
It's amazing.
Now we've got Bucky Brooks said Wentz is, from an athletic standpoint, comparable to Cam Newton. If this is all true, that will be something to see. From my watching of him on tape, at no point did I think I was watching Andrew Luck
or Cam Newton.
I thought I was watching a very interesting guy who was pretty darn good at the level he was at.
In an Edmonton Eskimo uniform.
Yes, indeed. You know, it's funny. Mayock, I don't know if you remember what he said about Johnny Manziel, but he basically said that he had the same ceiling, which I'll use as kind of the loose term, but basically was saying that he could be Steve Young.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we've seen that, right?
We've seen that, that's right.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Or we haven't seen that.
No, we certainly have not. We have not seen that. All right, Gibbs, let's go talk about this.
Number one. Let's do that, guys. Question number one today. Give me one Browns defensive lineman whose stock was up after the season and one Browns defensive lineman who needs to step up as we enter the 2016 season.
You know, I mean, can I, because I love Jamie Meter. Do you? I mean,
yeah, that's fair.
I love Jamie. Is that fair?
Fair.
But I do think the kid Cooper, every time I thought he played, he jumped out at me. And that even happened in the preseason. I mean, he got in the preseason games.
Get a couple sacks.
And he gets sacks. And didn't he lead the NFL in the preseason in sacks? I think he might have been right up at the top.
Yeah, I think
Two or three. But every time he played, I thought he played well. But I got to tell you something. Every team needs a Jamie Meter.
Yep.
Every team needs a Jamie Meter. And I just thought he was a terrific kid that played his tail off all the time. And the way he's battled to make it, you need a guy like that. I mean, you can go high draft choices and guys that are going to jump out of the sky in front of you when you get down to Indianapolis. But every team's got a Jamie Meter. And if you have two of them, you're better off, too.
Yeah, you got somebody to do that dirty work.
What about that, Jason? I like Meter.
I like Meter. I like the motor.
Yeah.
I mean, he's constantly working. Guy works at his craft.
Oh, he does,
I truly appreciate
that. Never gives up on a play.
Yep.
Nothing flashy. He's just solid.
Yeah, he plays.
And he's reliable and plays hard.
There you go. Who do you have?
I would say my stock up after the season, I think Desmond Bryant was our best defensive lineman last year. And I think when you were looking at his salary, you thought this is a guy that – probably wouldn't be here in 2016. I think he's due about $8 million this year. But he was the one guy, when properly motivated, that was able to be dominant for stretches on our defensive line.
Yeah, he was. You're right.
And I think that he is our best player. Now, we need to find the heir apparent there at some point, but I think his stock was up for me, because I would have thought going into the year, last year would have been his last year in Cleveland, and now I think that he was a guy that, when you go back and watch our defense, was one of the more consistent performers on that defense.
All right, now, Stock, who it seems as though, in listening to a lot of people, especially Ray Horton last week, they got a lot planned and there are a lot of chips on Danny Shelton's table.
That's who I'd
say
step up. Danny Shelton needs to be a difference maker.
Yeah, and he brought him up five times.
Yeah, and so hopefully he can. And I think for Danny, I know that's his body, I know that's his build. I just think he needs to dedicate himself to getting in the best shape that he can so he can play three downs, he can be relentless, and get a little bit maybe more functional strength movement. Now, he moves great for his size, and I've seen great Samoan athletes and Islanders athletes who have that body. They don't look muscular, but they're incredibly strong and agile, and he mm-hmm. was deceiving given his size. But I think for Danny at this level to continue to work on that, his physique, as Jameis Winston just talked about, I think that that will be good because I think a lot is going to be put on his shoulders, and the Browns need him to be a guy that can anchor that line.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. At number 12, sure.
Number 2.
Why wasn't Xavier Cooper more successful in his rookie campaign, John?
I don't think he played enough. I think that they were late to the party getting him in there. And
it was
an
active week one, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there were times where he had to fight his way to get on the field, but I never thought he disgraced himself or looked out of place once he got on the field. I think it might have been a CD, a coach's decision.
So we were talking, it's interesting. Randy Starks has been released, but Desmond Bryant was the highest graded player on the Browns defense last year per Pro Football Focus. Number two was Jamie Meter. So you and I were onto something with those two. The lowest grade from, this is again Pro Football Focus, was Xavier Cooper. And according to them, that he really struggled in run defense. I think for Xavier Cooper, his quick first step was the biggest asset.
He would run by
and sometimes
walk
he
by
would
plays.
Walk by plays, and I think defenses picked up on that and started to use that against him. So I think for Xavier Cooper to really progress in year two, he needs to add some more stuff to his repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
And I like him though. I think he's got a good motor. I think he's a good kid. I think he's got good athleticism, and I'm interested to see where he goes in year number two.
Yeah,
I think he can be a good interior pass rusher.
Yeah, now it's a difference because he was an outside guy here, but Sheard had a lot of trouble in his rookie year, just running by plays.
Yeah.
Mingo, in a different role, has had a lot of trouble with that, but he recovers sometimes because of his athleticism. But, yeah, I mean, usually a young guy has that problem.
Yeah.
Number three.
In your opinion, can Danny Shelton be an every-down player in the National Football League?
Before I answer this, I want to say one other thing. When you're Xavier Cooper, you come from Washington State where you were playing every single snap and you were able to get into the flow of the game, get a feel for the offensive line, get a feel for what you were supposed to do. I also think part of the reason that he had his struggles and his inconsistency and would overrun plays is he's like, I get 20 plays a game. I need to go out there and make an impact on these plays. And you try to do too much as opposed to just doing your job.
Might have been the Nate Orchard. You know,
sure.
Early when you get out there, you want to five sacks on one series.
On one play. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and you can't do that. As for Shelton, I do think he can be an every down player in the NFL. I think that he's a guy that you want on the first and second down to stop the run, stuff the middle. But I think on third down, he can play a very valuable role just collapsing the pocket and mm-hmm. not allowing quarterbacks to step up and allowing your guys around the edge to have better lanes.
Because when I watch the Broncos defense, especially in their playoff run, as much great pressure as they got on the outside, there was pressure coming through the middle of that pocket that, you know, really was effective. I mean, it really was effective.
Yeah.
So everyone looks at edge rushers. You know, Ray Horton talked about, you know, you got to have a Batman and a Robin. But, you know, sometimes you need the push in the middle, too.
Absolutely, because that allows those edge rushers to get to their spot when the quarterback can't step up. If you can't get up in the middle, they can just step up and get out of
absolutely.
The pocket and move around and avoid the edge rush.
Number four.
What's more of a priority for the Browns in the draft? Getting a playmaking wide receiver or an impact defensive lineman who can rush the passer effectively?
Go ahead, Nathan.
I'm going to say wide receiver because I think with the kind of defense we run, we need an impact outside linebacker who can rush the passer more than we need an impact defensive lineman who can rush the passer effectively. Now, obviously, it would be great if you had J.J. Watt in the 3-4. That's a different thing. He seems to be very rare. But when you look at the great 3-4 defenses in the NFL, they have the two guys on the outside. When Baltimore was at its best, you know, you had Suggs and Doomerville. When you've got in Denver, you've got Ware and Von Miller, Tom Bahali and Justin Houston out down there in Kansas City. You need that's what you need. If you can get that guy on the outside, I think that is a bigger value to you than the defensive lineman.
I am really I think that I'm fascinated how they're going to look at the wide receiver position, and I would love to see Gordon come back. I loved watching him play when he was really ready to play. I mean, he was incredible. He was out of the mold that we haven't seen around here, you know, in a long, long time, you know, maybe ever. So But I still do think they need another young wide receiver playmaker guy.
Absolutely.
And I think it's been, you know, it's been neglected the last couple of years. There's been a lot of makeshift plans with it. But why not get your own guy and get a big playmaker?
Yeah.
Number five.
Why shouldn't we compare Joey Bosa to J.J. Watt?
I just don't think he's that same player. I don't think he's necessarily that talented. People see J.J. from talking to scouts. People see him more of like a Chris Long than a J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt is the best defensive player in the country. I mean, he's the best player in the league. He's a guy that is huge, strong, fast, etc. Now, Joey Bosa isn't, I don't think, the same level of an athlete as J.J. Watt. Maybe I could be wrong about that, but I don't think he is. I think that Bosa's very, very good, but I don't think he's going to be the guy that transforms the National Football League in the way that J.J. Watt has. And to put those comparisons on him because he is from the Big Ten, because they're both white defensive linemen, I just don't think that's fair.
Here's the other thing. When we went in, when the Texans came here a couple of years ago, and it was a big game at that time for the Browns, you really almost had to build your entire offensive package and around J.J. Watt, what you could do with him, how you could handle him, and that's one player. And it took a great deal of – you really have to put a lot into what you're going to do and how you're going to try and handle him when you're going to play the Texans and you're going to go up against him. I mean, he really consumes a lot of your effort
everything.
To try and do that, and that still may not get it done.
No.
I don't think Joey Bosa is that kind of guy. There aren't many.
No.
You know, so is. I think that would be an unfair comparison, especially early on.
It's just a standard that
career.
He can't live up
no,
to.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
in Ohio, especially because he went to Ohio State, people – have gone, you know, gaga for him. And here's an article that was actually at NFL.com. And the question was, this was by Daniel Jeremiah, asked five NFL personnel executives for a comparison for Bosa, because everybody keeps talking about J.J. Watt. And Daniel Jeremiah's point was, they're different. Watt's more explosive. He's much thicker. He's bigger.
Thicker,
he's more of a 3-4 guy, where he sees Bosa as a 4-3 DN. And the evaluations were Michael Strahan, Jared Allen, Chris Long, Jared Allen. So Jared Allen, 4-3 DN, rush the passer on the outside, but not just that massive physical monster that can completely disrupt and change everything you do.
Look at the and I go back to that game against the Browns when the Texans came in here and beat them with Ryan Mallett that day. Look at what Watt did in that game. I mean, he roughed the punter a couple of times, but he was in there and you know, really affecting the kicking game. He scored offensively,
and he
was unblockable on defense. People talk about how important the three phases of the game are. This guy was in every phase of the game. Unbelievable performance.
Unbelievable. Yeah, he is as good as it gets. All right, last one.
Number six.
Is Noah Spence a better prospect than Joey Bosa going into the draft?
Get out your lighter, because here comes a hot take. Yes.
He is.
If Noah Spence played for Ohio State this year and did what I think Noah Spence would have done there and been the most dominant rusher off the edge in the entire country, I believe that Noah Spence would be in the discussions for a top three pick. I believe when you look at it, and if I don't know if you remember, when we first started looking at the first mix, Noah Spence was bottom 20s, could potentially be there at 32. Now I've seen him. He's in the top 10 in every mock draft after the Senior Bowl. I've seen him in the top 5 now. I think that Noah Spence is a guy that is going to be, if it weren't for the off-field stuff, I think that he would be drafted in the top 4.
Where do you think, if he's in the top 10, where do the people have him kind of aligning with? Is there some team that takes it, you know, and just says, hey, we're all in on him?
Here, let me pull it up. All right, so people have it going. I've seen him Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I've seen one that made me very scared. I saw him at the Baltimore to kind of be the heir apparent for Doomerville and Suggs.
Right.
I've seen it number 8 to the Miami Dolphins, and I think maybe 10 to the Giants. But if he ended up in Baltimore, I wouldn't like that. And some people think it's interesting. The talk right now is that Spence – there are a group of people that believe Spence will actually be drafted before Bosa, and Bosa, interestingly enough, is going to be one of the people that falls. And when people say fall, people thought he might go number 1, and he's going to fall, you know, down into the 5, 6, 7, 8 range, which is still a very good pick. But that he may be maxed out athletically, And that's what people are starting to say about Bosa, whereas Spence, it seems like it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, remember the year everybody thought that when Clowney was coming out that he might be the player that would drop, and then finally, really in the last week or two, just before the draft, I mean, he became a lock. Yep. You know, he became a fit for Houston.
And then you got Khalil Mack in that same draft.
Yes.
He's an absolute monster. When we come back, Tom Reed from Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer will be with us on the Ohio Business Machines hotline. Zagurin Donovan, CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagurin, Jim Donovan. We go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline right now and bring in Tom Reed from Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Tom, how are you?
Good.
If you get ready for the combine, Tom, what are you most interested to see down there in Indy?
Sometimes the combine can get overhyped because of the fact that a lot of what these players have accomplished and what a lot of what they're being kind of analyzed on is stuff that's already happened. I think you run a real risk of putting too much into the combine performances and the workout type warriors. I think Bill Belichick has mentioned that in the past, that guys should not train for the combine specifically because that's really not what they're looking at. That said, you want to hear what some of these players, especially the quarterbacks, have to say. You know how they're going to go through interviews with the teams. So those are kind of the key things, and of course the medicals, and if there's any surprises that come out of the medical examinations of these players, and how that would really impact their draft status.
You know, Tom, here's an interesting matchup or situation, and that is, and you'll see it play out, but with everyone kind of focusing in on the quarterback class and where the Browns are picking at number two and the need of a quarterback, but now they have such a quarterback-friendly head coach, and who has, an assistant alongside of him of Pep Hamilton, who really has worked with quarterbacks. That would seem to me, if I was a young kid, that's going to be high in the draft and go to a team that really desperately needs a quarterback and a franchise guy at that, that would seem to me to be very exciting and enlightening, that you're going to go possibly to a team that has guys that know the position.
Sure.
And have had great success with it.
Yeah, I think it's a balancing act. I think you're right on that. And but of course, the reason there's a need at quarterback is usually because the team has been so bad.
Yeah.
And we
but not because of these guys that are here.
No, without question. I mean, you've got new guys coming in who Hugh Jackson has a good resume with quarterbacks. But again, usually when you're coming to a bad team, that also notes that the team has struggled in recent years. And just to turn it around a bit, if you're a young quarterback coming in here and you saw the pounding the guy that Marcus Mariota took last year, one of my first questions is, what are you doing about Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz?
Good point.
We've seen this franchise time and time again allow its best young talent to get away. I mean, and you're maybe seeing it again this year with Mitchell Schwartz, and we just saw T.J. Ward win a Super Bowl coming off a Pro Bowl season. The Browns allowed him to let go. So if I was one of these young quarterbacks, I would be saying, who's going to be protecting me?
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, why did you almost trade Joe Thomas last year?
What do you want to see happen with this offensive line?
I think that they should, Mack is probably going to be a very difficult guy to get signed before free agency. He's probably going to go to free agency and likely he's going to be gone. I would re-sign Mitchell Schwartz. I he's coming off his best year in the pros. I thought his last 2 years have been decent. His second year, he had some injury issues and it wasn't as good as he was his rookie year. I would re-sign Schwartz, and I would keep Joe Thomas. To me, we've seen this happen, and Jim, you certainly saw it happen with Tim Couch.
Yes, I was going to bring that up, Tom, yeah.
You bring in a young quarterback, and the guy never had a chance because he was just absolutely beaten like a pinata in his first 3 or 4 years in the league.
In his first game, Tom, in his first game.
And we saw that last year firsthand. The Browns, one of their best games of the year defensively, was against Marcus Mariota, who had nobody in front of him.
Interesting, though. Our quarterbacks also did get beaten up last year with this offensive line.
Yeah. I'm interested on a point that Tom mentioned about, you know, you hear about these interviews and how important they are. You know, it might be the most important thing down there, right, when they get a chance to meet with these guys. So let's say they sit in front of quarterbacks, and I'm curious. I had never heard that is a part of the equation here. How does a team take it when the player starts interviewing them and says to them, well, wait a minute. I mean, you know, I think I'm pretty good. It's great. It would be great to be there. But how are you going to keep me healthy? How are you going to keep me upright? That would be interesting. And I wonder if these kids have the chutzpah, or if they're coached so much, not only in the 40-yard dash, but they're coached to ask questions too. You know, you see them go down there to the John Gruden quarterback camp, and he just controls the whole thing on that show. But, you know, you wonder, Tom, do they fire back? Do they have the gumption to say, hey, listen, what about that offensive line? I mean, yeah, what are you going to do with Joe Thomas?
Yeah, and you'd also probably ask them, Jim, why didn't you run the football last year? Why did it take the week 14 to figure out how to run the football? I mean, you talk about all the sacks they had last year. I mean, there's a myriad of reasons. Not saying the offensive line had a good year, because it probably didn't. But they were constantly behind in games.
Sure.
They were always behind in games. And they didn't run the ball. They didn't run the ball until week 13 and 14. Now, again, Johnny helped out a little bit with him running around. But you know, you talk to a guy like Isaiah Crowell, who couldn't even hide his disappointment with how they ran the offense last year. So, you know, there are factors why that they gave up so many sacks last year, beyond just the fact that some of those line guys weren't necessarily great. And, oh, by the way, two of them made the Pro Bowl anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes,
right.
They certainly did.
You know, when I watched, Nathan, just for a second, when I watched Crowell run against the 49ers that day near their last win, I mean, you know, you said to yourself, I build on what Tom's point was. You go, wow. Where was this?
And yeah. I think they had to change a little bit to the more of a power scheme, which suited him better. They ran well against Kansas City. I think Pastor, unbelievably, had a kind of a big impact because of the way that he was playing and the physicality he was playing with. And towards the end of the year, they got away from some of their earlier tendencies, which was when they were going to run, they'd always go the jumbo package, two tight ends, Dre would be in there, and they started to run a little bit more out of three wides and spread people out and give these guys an opportunity to create some lanes, because we talked about earlier, this line is incredibly talented, but this isn't the kind of line with Joe Thomas and Schwartz where you say, we're just going to line up and pound the ball down, and you're going to impose your will on somebody.
Right, yeah.
And it'll be interesting. Tom, you talk about bringing back Mitchell Schwartz, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think he's played well. I think the evolution of the National Football League is going to be somewhere in the next, you know, between now and the next 5 years, that right tackles are going to be regarded the same as left tackles as teams try to emulate and get those edge rushers coming from both sides, that it's going to be just as valuable to have a good right tackle as it is to have a good left tackle. So I'm with you there. When you think of Mitchell Schwartz and a guy who's going to hit the market coming off of the Super Bowl game we saw where a right tackle was abused, you know, what if he wants to be paid like the top or second or third right tackle in the league? Do you make that kind of an investment at that position right now?
That is a very difficult question. It's one that they're going to have to try to figure out. And let's not forget, the salary cap's going up for a lot of teams.
Yep.
They're going to want to, if they can get a guy like Mitchell Schwartz, I'm sure there's going to be teams out there. There's going to be plenty of suitors for him. And we saw, I have not seen line play in the offense in the NFL in recent years as bad as it has been in the last couple of years. And there's probably a lot of factors, including just how great these athletes are coming off the edge to rush them. But when you've got a guy that in the last few years, like Schwartz, has played well, you know, it's not like the Browns are pressed up against the salary cap here. And then they don't exactly have to pay a franchise quarterback right now. So they've got room to make moves. I would, those main four free agents, I would try to sign all those guys back. Even with a guy like Tayshaun Gibson, if you can't get him under contract, because obviously he didn't have a great year last year, but, man, if you're going to use a franchise tag, that might not be a bad place to use it.
Interesting.
Thank you very
Tom,
much.
Tom, yeah, thank you very much.
Yep, we'll see you down in Indy. Looking forward to your reports on Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, final thoughts, Jim and I wrapping up our time here this week on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, back for our final thoughts before I head off to the combine. And, Jim, as we were talking, this free agency thing, you know, we heard Tom Reed say I'd sign all four of them. Again, it's a process, and I think what's interesting is, you know, it's a meeting. It's supply and demand, number one,
yeah.
And then it's a meeting of values. You, Jim Donovan, somebody wants to approach you for something, you say, look, this is what I believe I'm worth.
Yeah.
They may say, well, we think you're worth this, and unless you can bridge that gap.
Let me give them a contact number right now if they want to do that.
He is accepting all offers right now.
Here's my question to you. You're going down to the combine, and, you know, there'll be the media contingent from Cleveland. They're, you know, and they're probably in the cars right now. Drive safely. But this is the Browns will get exposed to the national media here, too, because everybody's there. What will they be hit with? Will they be hit with more on what is this analytical thing that you're doing, and are we going to start to see it play out here? And I think the initial answer would be, yeah, that's why we're doing it. Number two, is there a Manziel factor in this again, which is, could be a short answer?
Probably, yeah.
And what, you know, and number three would be, what are you going to do with that number two pick, and which quarterback do you like? Is that the scope, do you think, where the Browns will get hit with?
Yeah, I think from Hugh's standpoint, it's going to be about, you know, what coming in here, why did he take the Browns job?
Which was a great moment for the Browns. A
huge moment. Yeah. They got the guy that was the consensus number one coaching
candidate, and
their guy. So I think for Hugh, it's going to be that. What do you think of this roster? What do you think your biggest needs are? Talk, I'm sure, about the quarterbacks quite a bit.
Yep.
Sashi's going to speak with the media, and this is going to be Sashi's first time with the national media. And so
right.
I think he's going to get grilled on, you know, what are your qualifications to be in this job?
Right.
How's it been going so far? You put together this team. What are the goals? What's Dee Podesta's role?
Yeah.
How are you working with Hugh, who's been in the game for so long and has such strong opinions, and quarterback?
And that basic question that always comes up, tell me about the 53-man roster.
Yeah, who's
how much control?
Why do you have
the last control?
And maybe the free agents. I think there'll be some about that. What's any updates on Mitch and Gip and Trav and et cetera?
And Dee Podesta will be there. Paul will be there?
Yes, that is my expectation.
Okay, that's interesting.
Because he's going to be there because you want him to be a part of these interviews and pulling whatever data he can from these things.
Well, have a great time.
I certainly will.
Have a great time.
Feel free to come on out and join me. We can go out tonight. You got
to
go.
I have never been to the combine.
We've got to change that.
We
got to change it.
I had a ball here the 2 days.
I had a great time with you as well. It'll be Gibbs and I from the combine starting tomorrow. Now stay tuned here on ESPN 850 for the Golden Boys. For Jason Gibbs and Jim Donovan, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.